Oh, hey, Mets fans. Welcome back to Amazing Avenue Audio, the show. My name is Brian. With me, as always, is Chris. And Chris, we are recording this the morning after the All-Star game. The Mets' first half is obviously wrapped up. They ended the first half with 58 wins, the second-best record in the National League, the fourth-best record in baseball. They are firmly in first place. They took 3 of 4 from the Marlins over the weekend, took 2 of 3 from the Braves before then. It seems like the Mets ended the first half. You know, I mean, obviously, a sweep would have been nice, right? But they ended the first half strongly. And the second half schedule, as we've talked about before, is not super strong. You know, there are a couple of Yankees series and things like that. But it seems like the Mets are in a pretty good position. And so now that the first half is in the rear view, you know, we've talked a lot about just generally not panicking too much about Mets-related stuff. And I feel like that's our general feeling right now. But is there anything different for you going into the second half than you felt, you know, a week, 2 weeks ago?
No, not really. Obviously, a sweep of the Cubs would have been preferable, especially since
I said Marlins. I meant Cubs. Oh. Sorry.
That's okay. We're recording in the morning.
We are. Yes, that's true.
But it would have been preferable, especially since they had a lead, albeit a relatively thin lead at one run in two different points of the game in the series finale on Sunday. But they took 3 out of 4. I have no complaints that they won two kind of random, odd, stupid extra inning rule games on Saturday in that doubleheader. Whatever. They won. They won the games. That's all that I care about. They won 3 out of 4. And they finished that stretch, that 10-game stretch, playing relatively well. I mean, the biggest thing was just that, and we already talked about it last week, but taking 2 of 3 from the Braves, putting a little more distance there instead of, you know, giving up first place in the series in Atlanta. They're in a good spot. There's really no other way to put it. And I think they've shown, aside from the 4 games against the Astros, they've shown they can hang with the other good teams in baseball. Their West Coast trip back in June that everybody was dreading went fairly well. And that makes the start of the second half, I don't know, exciting to me. They're playing a good team in the Padres and then obviously a very good team in the Yankees. But, hey, bring it on.
Yeah, and, you know, the Padres are certainly a good team. But I don't think the Padres are scary the way the Astros were scary. At least not for me. But yeah, no, I think everything you said is pretty much spot on. You know, look, they are doing well against, you know, they have a 28-22 record of teams over 500. They are playing well both on the road and at home. They have a strong run differential. You know, they've won 6 of their last 10, and that includes, you know, games against the Braves. So it just seems to me like most of the things you look for, like when I'm looking at a team, I'm trying to see what the sort of trends are. I look at their record above 500 teams. I look at the last, you know, 10 or 20 games. I look at run differential. All those things are relatively predictive of how a team is looking going forward. And again, the Braves are, before the break, the Braves were playing like, you know, unbelievable baseball, just baseball that is, I mean, until they ran into the Mets, I guess they were playing baseball that just seemed like they were on an almost historic streak. They're not going to play that way forever. And, you know, if they can take a couple of games from the Padres, if they can split against the Yankees, look, even if they get swept by the Yankees, it's not the end of the world. But that's surrounded by a couple of off days, and then they go play the Marlins, and after that, the Nationals, and, you know, then things lighten up just a little bit. So, but you know, we are entering that period in August where there are 2 series with the Braves in relatively short succession, one of them being two 4-game series with the Braves, correct? No, a 5-game and a 4-game.
Yeah.
My goodness. Yeah. that's a little scary.
Yeah. I mean, the thing I'll say about that, though, is that those series are just really hard for either team to sweep
Sure. Yes.
And I don't know. Obviously, that's the biggest opportunity for things to change between them in the division. But if they come close to splitting those series in either way,
right,
then the Mets are still in front of the Braves. So it's obviously in that 5-game series to start, or not start August, but the first weekend of August, you don't want to go 1-4. But right, if you go 2-3 or 3-2, that's really not all that different.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I mean, look, we keep saying this, but the Mets are a good team. And everybody should go to AmazingAvenue.com right now and read the piece by Dave C. and Thomas Henderson about how the Mets are good. We should enjoy this. It's a very refreshing piece that I have not seen. I have not seen a lot of people writing things like that on the Mets internet. And I'm glad we were the ones to have to publish it, because it's a great piece. And it certainly is, it represents the way I feel pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's been plenty out there of, I don't know, expecting things that happened to the Mets in the past to happen again now. And I think sometimes we just need to remind ourselves that Francisco Lindor and Max Scherzer are on this team. And I know neither one was on the All-Star Game roster, but both had justifiable cases to be there, in my opinion, and they're both significant players who were not even, I don't know, considered. You'd be laughed at for bringing them up as potential fits for the Mets just a few years ago.
Yes.
Just 2 years ago, honestly. I never, when Scherzer was in Washington and pitching as well as he had pitched and all that, it never ever crossed my mind that, oh, this guy could be on the Mets when that right, contract runs out. Like, not in a million years would you expect that. So I think we have to remember those things, and that, you know, it's worth acknowledging that the news, the most recent update on Jacob deGrom was that he had some mild shoulder soreness after, the last time he threw, and his simulated game, I think it is, that they were going to have him throw either yesterday or today, is going to be tomorrow, Thursday, instead. And obviously, I get it. You don't want to hear anything other than, hey, he feels amazing and everything's exactly on schedule, but like all baseball news and, you know, anything else, really, I'd like to just wait until there's an actual update. Hey, he threw on Thursday. It went fine. He's going to pitch for the Mets on this day. Or, okay, he didn't throw on Thursday. Or it didn't go fine. And now he's being shut down. Like, I need, like, that level of update to react too strongly to it. And I get assuming the worst, because it's been a year since he pitched in a major league game. So I understand that. I'm just not ready to, jump to any conclusions yet.
No, I definitely understand that. Part of the issue is that it's been, you said DeGrom hasn't pitched in a year, but it seems like DeGrom has just been, you know, for a guy who was healthy for most of his early major league career, it feels like he's been a little bit snake bit the last couple of years. And so I understand that. It's also the player that we have been waiting for a return from with bated breath this entire time. And I think for a lot of us, even during, and not that the season had a lot of dark days, as it really hasn't, but I think for all of us, we have been saying things like, well, when DeGrom comes back, XYZ. I know I've been saying that stuff, right? That is absolutely how I felt about this season at points, you know? And so I think just that he represents more than just this season. He represents more than just one player. He sort of represents the hope and future of the franchise. And that, I know that sounds hyperbolic, but I legitimately think right now people feel like if he doesn't come back when we think he will, as strong as we hoped he will, that puts a pretty big that could change people's thoughts about the second half pretty considerably.
Yeah, no. And I've commented on this in a sort of Mets morning news kind of way, just references to things in just one sentence. But it does annoy me that there's an obsession of finding a way to add negativity to the situation with big things that happen with the Mets. So when DeGrom's updates were all on track and good so far in the rehab work that he's doing to, you know, to get back, there were multiple pieces and tweets from local or national baseball writers speculating on what DeGrom was going to do at the end of the year with his contract. And, you know, oh, is he still going to opt out? And here's the teams he might sign with. And I hate that in sports. If the team is really bad, then of course we've done it a bunch. There have been times we've written about offseason needs in July.
Right.
But they're not. Like, you just, it just doesn't matter right now. It's like the ultimate in just trying to tap into knowing that there's this anxiety among a lot of Mets fans that, oh, the other shoe's going to drop and something's going to go wrong. So it's, if DeGrom's healthy, it's he's going to leave. And then if there's even the slightest bit of a setback, oh, he's never even going to come back.
Right.
It's just unnecessary. I think after decades of being conditioned to expect certain things out of the team, as Mets fans, we can get to those points of negativity on our own. We don't need...
Very fair.
We don't need the extra fuel thrown in on the fire. But yeah, let's hope he does his throwing tomorrow. Everything's good. And we're still near seeing him back. And by no means is it an excuse, but the Mets have gotten here without him. Like, that is remarkable, you know?
Yes, it is.
If there's a setback that, hey, he's not going to pitch in a major league game in July, then I think you should realistically change your approach to the trade deadline. You're not going to find a DeGrom replacement, but I would try to account for it if you think that there is a chance that that it won't go well the rest of the season. But until that actually happens, I'm going to assume that we actually get to see him pitch in a Mets uniform.
I want to be right there with you, and I think I am, but I just also, I feel like there's this thing that happens to players, but especially pitchers, where injuries just start to cascade and minor things become major. And then when you're rehabbing the major thing, another minor thing pops up. And I'm not saying that's what's happening with DeGrom. However, we've been down this road. I mean, especially with some of our more marquee pitchers, you know, over the last 15 or 20 years, you know, it happened with Pedro. It happened with Johan. You know, these are just the things that happen when a pitcher starts to break down. I don't think DeGrom is there, but it's certainly giving me PTSD to when we've had pitchers in that position before. And so I understand the anxiety of the fans. I truly do. But I think there's a difference between being anxious about something and making something a foregone conclusion. And as we know, Mets fans, Panic City, as Sandy Alderson once described us, you know, we tend to do that pretty well on our own, right? And like you said, let's just wait for something official before we really get upset. And also, I think a lot of people feel like if there's a setback, it's the end of the season for him. He's not coming back at all. And I feel like that is not at all what that is not a realistic prognosis. It could be a 2-week setback. It could be a 2-day setback. It could be the end of the season. Look, I am not a soothsayer. I don't know these things. But let's just pump the brakes here a little bit.
Yeah. Hey, and the last time we were optimistic about a ace level pitcher for the Mets with Max Scherzer, We weren't 100% right. He did miss some time, but he got back a hell of a lot faster than anybody expected. You know,
so. That is true. That is true.
I don't know. Yeah. Whatever powers we may have on this podcast, hopefully we're using the right ones.
I will never believe that just because I know how things work. But, you know,
we should tell people we had an idea. Maybe, I don't know, it might be too much to make it an official segment, but like we should just shit talk a player every week.
Right. Call it like the reverse jinx or something, right? Where we just, so we say that bum DeGrom, he'll never come back. Just say that, and then he comes out, lights blaze, you know, guns blazing, lights
the
out.
The only thing Jacob DeGrom will ever hear from this show, somebody makes a soundbite of that.
Exactly me saying that, yeah. Oh, boy.
I'm Shireen Ghaffari.
And I'm Alex Heath. We're hosting Land of the Giants, a podcast about the biggest tech companies of our time. This season, Meta, formerly known as Facebook. It's a company in a particularly controversial and vulnerable moment. Mark Zuckerberg is placing a multi-billion dollar bet towards an imagined metaverse future. Meanwhile, the rest of us are still grappling with what he's already built.
This season, we're going to talk to the executives steering Meta's biggest decisions. And you'll hear from some of Meta's sharpest critics, its former employees.
We'll explore why Zuckerberg is taking the company in a bold direction and how Facebook's past will inform its future.
Land of the Giants, the Facebook Meta disruption. From Recode, The Verge, and the Vox Media Podcast Network. This season is sponsored by Klaviyo.
Subscribe for free wherever you listen and get our first episode on Wednesday, July 13th.
The Iowa Lottery was out there saying on a regular basis, hey folks, check your ticket, somebody's got $16 million. And it was sort of this mystery, why hasn't anyone come forward?
I'm Phoebe Judge, host of the podcast Criminal. True stories about people who've done wrong, been wronged, or gotten caught somewhere in the middle, told by people who know them best. Like a man who successfully figured out how to negotiate with his father's kidnappers after some trial and error.
They were just like, for that price, we won't even tell you where he's buried.
And a 12-year-old who solved a family mystery.
There were three little fingerprints. And I remember in junior DA camp, I was like, oh, fingerprints, this is definitely some evidence. Then we can find whoever broke into my grandmother's house.
Discover the unexpected side of true crime.
There were no security alarms whatsoever. The file cabinets were not even locked. So that gave us enough information to plan the actual break-in.
Listen to Criminal now, wherever you get your podcasts.
So this is Mets related, but just sort of more baseball related. Chris, what's your relationship to the Home Run Derby and the All-Star Game?
The Home Run Derby is the greatest event on the planet when Pete Alonso is winning it, and when he isn't, I shut it off. I mean, it's a lot of fun. I think MLB has definitely reinvigorated it with the tournament style of it, and I think people need to acknowledge that the first time Alonso won it, and this year when Juan Soto won it. Oh, I have another thought on that, too. I'm glad you brought that topic up. But specifically with the Derby, I think we all, as baseball fans, are like, hey, this format is great. But if we agree on that, you can't get to the final round and be like, oh, well, if you add up all the home runs, this guy hit more home runs than this guy. Like, nope. Like,
nope, that's not the format. The format is right. What it is.
Either the format made it like a whole new exciting event that we all enjoy, which I think is the case, or you want the old format and this new format, it isn't any good. But if you want it to be fun like this, I think this is the way to go. And sometimes tournaments just go that way. Like the luck of the draw. Julio Rodriguez was just on fire in the first two rounds. And Pete Alonso, I think, would have beaten everybody else in every other round. But hey, that's the format. That's right. The way it goes. And then I have notes on how ESPN shows it to us. It's like, I don't know, home runs are majestic, especially in the Derby. A lot of them are, you know, high arc, just beautiful home runs to watch. And we get like a super tight half screen zoomed in on the hitter taking the swing. And then maybe you see most of the home runs actually go over the fence somewhere. You know, I would love to watch it from some vantage point that, I don't know, either just like a zoomed out angle from the first to third baseline based on the handedness of the hitter. Mm-hmm. And just like, let's just watch it, because you think, I mean, I went to the Home Run Derby at Citi Field. So I've seen that in real life, but really I think back to like, I went to Fenway Park a ton as a kid, and the A's would come into town and you had, you know, McGuire just putting on a show, hitting ball after ball over the Green Monster. And it was nice to watch it, where it's just, you don't need to be up in anybody's face. It's just, I just want to zoom out and just see it. See the whole, you know, start to finish of where all these baseballs are going by yeah. these, you know, excellent players. So I think the format is really good. I wish ESPN would change the way they showed it to us, and whatever, they can do the on-field stuff, the announcers, like, I don't care about that. I just want to see more of it.
You know what angle I think might be kind of fun is the, like, the when you're batting in a baseball video game angle.
Yeah.
Like, be behind the batter, but far enough back that you can watch the arc of the ball from there. Maybe yeah. maybe that's an angle to experiment with.
Yeah, no, and I mean, as things move more and more into streaming apps, just giving people options. Like, there's no reason that there couldn't be an option to say, hey, I just want the baseline or behind the plate camera. No anything else. I just want one view of this.
Right.
You know, there's no reason that there can't be a feed like that. But yeah, I was bummed for Alonso that he didn't win, just because being the first person to win three of them in a row would have been cool. And he takes the event seriously. And
he takes it more serious than anybody else on the planet does, I think.
Yeah, yeah. But hey, I respect it. That's whatever your approach is to it is fine with me. And, you know, he's never a guy that's like, oh, man, he's so serious, he's not enjoying it.
Right.
So, yeah, I appreciate all of that. And yeah, so that's where I am on that. My other thought related to it was when Juan Soto won it, and whole swaths of, you know, Mets Twitter were, a Met won it anyway, a future Met won it, and all this stuff. And we could spend a whole podcast talking about trading for Juan Soto as a hypothetical. Obviously, he's a fantastic player, one of the best hitters out there, and I'd love for that to happen. But I wish our progression of like picking up things from Yankee fans started with a tiny bit of confidence about the first place team that's actually playing baseball on the field before we got to the, oh, everybody's a future Met part. Like, that's not the part of Yankee fandom I want. Like, I want the Mets to go after those players, but I don't want to say the same shit that they've said for years. Like, fair. Oh, you know, he's going to be a Met anyway. Sure. Obviously, I hope every great player is a Met, but yeah, like even Howie Rose tweeted about it. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, I don't want to be crankier than Howie Rose, but like,
Howie has absolutely been Cohen-pilled. Like, he is, I think he really buys into Steve Cohen essentially becoming like the new Steinbrenner in terms of spending.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's going to be the case. I hope it's, I mean, I hope that Cohen does what he needs to do in the seasons that it needs to be done. But that's not the same as being, that's not the same as becoming the Yankees and signing every free agent that's out there. But yeah, you know that, and I know that. So the Home Run Derby is one of my favorite nights of the baseball year, even though I know it is like dumb guy shit. As I said to my brother, like, look, the ball went far, right? Like, it's just like, it's not exactly the most strategic or intellectually stimulating part of baseball. But I am of the age where I grew up a huge Ken Griffey Jr. fan. And so watching Griff in those Home Run Derbies is like one of my most prized baseball memories. And I just think it's a fun event when it's done properly. And I think that this new format is really good. I think it makes a ton of sense for everyone involved. You know, it's just, I mean, the fact that Pujols made it past the first round is insane. And that's only really possible because of this format. And it was a super cool moment, right? Like that's an absolutely cool moment that I'm glad we as baseball fans got to see. And that would never have happened in the older format.
Right.
You know, it's a good thing that the format is this way. It's a good thing that everything went this way. And I think the Home Run Derby is a lot of fun. This is the one thing that has improved under Rob Manfred.
Yeah.
Literally the one.
Yep.
he had some quotes yesterday. I don't know if you saw some of his quotes yesterday saying that minor leaguers were paid a living wage.
Right. Yeah. No, the notion, the premise, whatever it was, he dismissed the whatever word he used that they were not paid a living wage. And yeah, there's still work to be done. I know minor leaguers, past minor leaguers got a fairly significant settlement out of the league over these issues recently, and some of the outcomes of that may affect in a positive way the treatment of minor leaguers moving forward. I think it's important to not just stop at, oh, the teams have to give them housing, which there's a huge difference between, hey, you got to earn it. It's really hard to make it to the major leagues, even if you have perfect conditions.
Yes.
So you still have to earn it. You just don't have to be treated like shit along the way. And like, even on an above average salary, if you had to be moved by your job potentially multiple times in a year and had to sign leases on places to live, how the hell would you pull that off? Right? Like,
I couldn't.
Like, no, right. And nobody could. And then these guys are not only making like awful money, but they were bounced around and, in a spot. Trevor May tweeted yesterday that there was a point in his minor league career that he bought two sheets to make a wall for his room in the living room. It's just ridiculous. Like, just a basic, like, hey, you have your own bed, your own room, and you can afford to eat decently, nutritious food. I don't get it. I don't know why collectively owners were just like okay with that. I think because they didn't see it as an opportunity to make money. I mean, that's obvious answer.
You've solved the riddle, my friend.
But it is an opportunity to make money. Like, you might be able to turn some of these guys into somebody who sells a ton of merch for you, you know?
Right.
And tickets and wins games.
That just isn't profitable enough for them.
Right. Like,
to fix the whole system, you would need a much higher percentage of people to become those universal source. Oh wait, no, that's entirely wrong. It's really cheap to fix the system. Sorry, right. I had to put on some bullshit there for a second, because it is actually relatively cheap to fix the system, and fuck the owners now and forever. It's time for music picks, Chris. I was going to give my All-Star Game thoughts, but you have a hard out, so let's do some music picks here.
Yeah,
what is
your
music pick for the week?
Well, only All-Star Game thought. Would have been nice to see Edwin Diaz pitching it, but with that, and more of the Mets in general. But anyway, back in May, which is a few months ago, a couple months ago now, at Waking Windows in Vermont, one of the bands that we saw for the first time is a band called Habibi, all women making like just chill, good music. And their most recent record came out in 2020. It's called Anywhere But Here. It's got a couple songs on it that I really like. Hate Everyone But You, Angel Eyes, Bad News, and really just a good listen from start to finish. They had not really popped up on my radar. It had been several years that their first album came out in 2014. And just, I didn't cross paths with that music at that time. So I'm sure the set that we saw in May had songs from both. But yeah, this record is just really good. If you have been listening to all of our music recs over the course of the podcast, you may remember the band La Luz, also an all-women band. And these two bands had done like a split 7-inch at some point in between Habibi's first and second records. And, you know, they're similar, but they don't sound exactly the same by any means. So, fun to see live and definitely enjoying this record. And I think it's it's good summer music. So Anywhere But Here by Habibi.
Very cool. My one All-Star Game thought is it was more fun before interleague play. That's my All-Star Game thought.
Yeah, and with the other uniforms. Okay, I'll
yes,
stop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there we go. This is our old cranky hour. This is our old man yells a cloud hour. So my pick is something I had not thought about in a very, very long time. Somebody on Twitter I saw in passing tweeted about the TV show Oddville MTV. Do you remember the show, Chris?
I can't say I do. What?
It was basically like a combination of a talk show and like a freak show. They'd have people out like eating glass and stuff. It was like it was like a circus sideshow type thing on MTV in the mid to late 90s, but they always had really interesting bands playing on it. And so I just did a little like search for bands who played on Oddville MTV, and there's like Guided by Voices played, Ween played, sort of your who you'd expect bands that were on 120 minutes a lot played the show. But there was a band called Skeleton Key, and I had this visceral flashback to seeing them on Oddville MTV in, it turns out, I believe in 1997. And I hadn't thought about Skeleton Keys since then. So I did a deep dive. Their 90s stuff is not on streaming platforms. It is on YouTube. And their record that was from, I believe it's 1997. Yes, it's called Fantastic Spikes Through Balloon. And I looked it up, and it is really, really great and fun. There is some like there's some great bass playing on it, some really angular guitar. But my favorite part is that they had... It was bass, guitar, and drums, and they had somebody playing what they called junk percussion, which is literally like just pieces of random stuff that gets played. And so the drummer is keeping like a solid beat, and then the junk percussionist is doing like interesting things that are syncopated off of that. It's just a really unusual sound I've never really heard in that way before. And the record is really interesting and really good, and it was a nice reminder of like, oh yeah, there was a time even in the sort of corporate MTV days where you could see a really weird band on a national platform, not at like 3 a.m. You know, it was just a cool reminder of sort of what used to be. And yeah, it's a record I'm going to try and track down a copy for myself, because you know, YouTube is my least favorite way to listen to music because ads and, you know, whatnot. So I got to find a copy for myself elsewhere. But yeah. Fantastic Spikes Through Balloon by Skeleton Key, a very odd record from Oddville MTV on my nostalgic brain trip I went on this week.
Nice.
Yeah. And that does it for this week's show. Thank you so much for listening. Go to AmazingAvenue.com for all your Mets-related news. Find Amazing Avenue on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. Chris is on Twitter at Chris McShane. I am on Twitter at Brian Izanab. And until next time, let's go Mets.